This podcast is being recorded on the lands of the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation. We pay our respects to elders past, present and emerging and acknowledge their ongoing connection to land, waters and culture. Colonization and genocide are ongoing processes which continue to this day. Sovereignty was never ceded. This always was and always will be Aboriginal land.
Hello and welcome back to AusPulse NACpod, the podcast where we bring you bite-sized chunks of Australian politics and news with a side of crispy memes. My name's Noon, also known as I Know Funkenstein, and with me is my co-host...
Zach Lesnack. Hey, what's up?
What up? We're also the official podcast of the AusPulse Shitposting Facebook group, which you can find on facebook.com/groups/AusPulse Shitposting. So hop on there and see some sick memes.
Yeah. Join the conversation.
Yeah. Welcome back, listeners and Zach. This is our first like proper news show of 2020.
Yeah. It's been a fucking amazing year so far.
Yeah.
Seen a few tweets going around. This week has been such a long year.
Seriously.
Which, yeah, for real. Luckily, we're an Australian news podcast, and as far as I know, I don't think there's anything else happening anywhere else in the world at the moment, which
No important news.
Nothing that we're going to have to
in the Middle East
skip
or
over.
Britain.
Yeah.
Nah.
Which is good. Yeah. I think we've made a good decision.
Cool. Let's hop straight into our entree, and this week for entrees, we're having lung marshmallows. I just made that up. We didn't workshop that joke before the mic.
I'm going to be honest. I kind of wish we had.
Well, we're stuck with it now. So this is about vaping. We mentioned vaping on the show a month or two ago when some new laws came into effect in Australia. And this is an article that came up in the ABC yesterday titled "Tobacco Giants Lobby PM and Key MPs with Pro-Vaping Message." So Philip Morris, which I believe is the world's largest tobacco company, or it's one of, has been meeting with Greg Hunt and other people and sending requests for meetings, and has also been meeting public servants, basically to try and overturn a law which forbids nicotine liquid being sold in Australia. So
yeah, we've got a lot of vaping here, but it's all just basically like sugar water, which tastes good and lets you blow out massive, entertaining
big fat
clouds,
yeah.
Fatty ghosts, as they are known in the vaping community.
Of which me and Zach are not a part of particularly.
Look, you know, I've been known to puff.
Yeah, yeah.
Puff, puff.
I have also been known to puff, but it's not really a big... You know,
we're not
I don't get those big clouds. I'm not an expert.
I don't have a YouTube channel of me doing smoke tricks as a 12-year-old kid.
Though, you know, maybe if we hit that 500 on Patreon, we'll start some. Anyway, so the nicotine liquid is illegal in Australia unless you have a prescription. And Philip Morris and other tobacco companies would like to make it legal. And so this is a terrible idea because all of the evidence basically suggests that vaping is... at least as bad for you as smoking cigarettes. And in fact, it seems like possibly vaping will kill you much faster than the cancer that you get from tobacco. Because it has a much shorter lead time before you start getting the effects.
But how painful is the death, though? Is it like a quick, nice...
I think it is actually fairly quick, yeah. I think people's lungs basically just like switch off. I'm not an MD.
Well, look, depending on your audience... may not be considered a few bad thing. This is obviously a bad idea. The other thing I think that's important to note is in the States where basically all vaping is nicotine vaping, there's been like a massive uptake in like people who are under 18 taking up vaping and getting addicted to nicotine. And there's like a really disturbing graph that I've seen that basically shows like underage smoking plummeting over the last couple of decades. And then there's like a point where Juuls, which is the most like common type of vape in the States, were introduced, and like teen vaping just like shoots through the roof. And so like more teens are now vaping than were ever smoking before. And they're all hooked on nicotine. It's not just like...
I saw an article the other day in The Age, which honestly, I'm a bit less on board with this than about the vaping thing, but I'm sure it's true to an extent, about like these new sort of craft beers that have like big rainbow coloring on it, and like the Fat Pony and that sort of thing that are like designed to be basically soft
lamp?
Drinks. Sorry, that's what I'm thinking of. I don't know where Fat Pony came from.
I don't think Noom really drinks, but...
No, I don't. That's true, yeah.
sorry, they can't tell.
I almost started saying fat yak, and then I was like, no, that's a different thing, but I picked the wrong animal.
That's meant to attract middle-aged men.
That's right, yeah, yeah. Anyway, my point is that the bright coloring and the, like, candy-flavored bevs are, like, uptick. They're designed to sell to underage people. Another really fucked thing about this vaping thing, which we've already talked about too long, is that it's the tobacco companies are, like, really specifically using this to try to get to First Nations communities, and there's this, like, handwritten bit on one of the letters that they wrote that's like, this will be really good for reducing smoking rates in Indigenous communities, but obviously it's gonna replace it by people vaping, which is still going to be extremely destructive for those communities. So yeah, fuck Philip Morris.
Yeah, it's a great example of like horrible industries just kind of adapting to new like regulatory environments. We're like, okay, yeah, we can't push our old horrible death sticks, but how about these fresh new death sticks?
Yeah,
and of course they've got the ear of the health minister on this. So very cool stuff. Capitalism working well. Good for people in communities.
Right. All right, Zach, should we move on to our First Nations story?
Yeah, so there was just one thing that seems to have kind of slipped a little bit under the radar, I guess, and, you know, because obviously the nation is very concerned with the bushfires at the moment, but there was this story of an Indigenous woman dying in custody in a Victorian jail 2 days after being refused bail. So we don't know anything really about this woman, you know, her name or even what, you know, nation she's from. She was 37 years old, and she was found dead in her cell. There is evidence that she was going through withdrawal at the time, and there's a whole bunch of really awful detail in this story about how traumatizing it was for other people in the prison, other inmates,
yeah,
basically.
Yeah, they basically heard her dying.
Yeah, yeah, and there's now this kind of secondary mental health crisis as a result of this from a bunch of people getting sort of traumatized by that event, which is really horrible.
Part of the reason that the story has come out is because one of the other people who are in the same unit of the jail, their lawyer has been trying to get some kind of attention to it because her client was sort of deeply disturbed by it.
Yeah. And so some of the kind of context for this story is just about how many women are imprisoned in Victoria. The number has been climbing over the past few years, partially as a result, apparently, of the tightening of bail laws, which means that women are being remanded in custody for really minor offences.
Yeah.
I mean, this is obviously an example of a system that is kind of broken and punishing disadvantaged and marginalized people, and especially women. But then obviously you've got that added kind of disadvantage of being Indigenous as well thrown into the mix. And so, you know, this is another really horrible story and shows that we've just got still a huge way to go on this. It's something that we've, you know, this is only weeks after the coronial inquest into Tanya Day's death occurred.
Which listeners may remember, we were sort of a bit hopeful about that might have some kind of impact on the way that First Nations people are treated in our justice system. And it seems like if that is going to happen, it hasn't happened yet. There was an interesting and horrible stat in this article, which is that 13% of the women in jail in Victoria are First Nations women, when they make up less than 1% of the population. So that's a 13 times overrepresentation in jail.
It's, yeah, absolutely fucked. The other thing that I thought was really shocking from this story is that about half of the women being held in custody in Victoria haven't actually been charged with anything.
Yep, yep.
So, yeah, I mean, these are kind of the result of, like, tough-on-crime sort of measures, some of which are pretty recent.
Yep.
So, yeah, that's, you know, still something that we need to be strongly petitioning our state government about, but it's also obviously a nationwide problem as well. All right, so we might move on to our next segment.
Yeah.
Fashy Australia.
So this week's Fashy Delight is in relation to Bruce Pascoe, who's a well-known author who wrote Dark Emu, which is a book about pre-colonial First Nations land management practices. We've mentioned it a few times on the show. It's very famous. I haven't actually read it, but Zach has, and
it's great.
It's great. So there's been some discussion lately about Bruce Pascoe's like heritage and whether or not he's really an Indigenous man. And the vast majority of this noise has been coming from Andrew Bolt.
Who is known to be a level-headed, very kind of...
Definitely never been convicted for racism.
It's coming from convicted racist.
Yeah.
Andrew Bolt.
But this development has actually come as a result of a First Nations woman named Josephine Cashman, who appears to be a right-wing conservative, which doesn't mean that her opinions aren't relevant, but, you know, it, I think is relevant to keep in mind when discussing this.
She's got strong ties to the Liberal Party. She's served under on a council like that advised Malcolm Turnbull at one point.
And she has asked Peter Dutton for an investigation of Bruce Pascoe for dishonesty offences, which basically means about she thinks he's lying about being Aboriginal and that he's like benefited monetarily from presenting himself.
From faking it.
Yep.
Peter Dutton obviously said, hey, that's fucked. Why would you do that?
Yeah, of course.
There's no way I'm going to advance this investigation.
Yeah. That was Zach being sarcastic, of course, for listeners who don't know his voice tone too well. Dutto has referred this on to the Australian Federal Police. And there's been some suggestions from Ms. Cashman and others that maybe a good way to deal with this would be to set up a National Register of Aboriginal People.
Something that has worked well. Registers, you know, putting people on lists.
Registers of people of a particular racial background.
Yeah, grouping them together.
Yeah.
Maybe there's some kind of visual identification.
Like a little patch that they could wear on their clothes.
Spitballing.
Just an idea. Or, you know, since we're going to have them all in this database, we could give them each like a number that they could then, you know, potentially...
This bit's making me sad now.
Yeah. It's okay, guys. I'm Jewish.
I'm not.
Okay. So, I mean, that's basically the whole story. Australia is a fascist hellhole. Peter Dutton and big ups Bruce Pascoe.
Yeah. It's ridiculous that this conversation is even happening. And it's been pointed out like a number of times on Twitter recently that Bruce Pascoe is also a CFA volunteer. So he's actually been out fighting fires.
Totally. They've been like, why hasn't he responded to these accusations or whatever? It's like, he's literally been...
But I mean, it also shows you what Peter Dutton has been up to during this time, because, you know, he's been pretty quiet.
Yeah.
He's just been, you know, doing his thing behind the scenes.
Mm-hmm. Just making sure that there's a Register of Aboriginal People.
Yeah, so hopefully that goes nowhere, but I guess we'll have to wait and see. Now we're going to do a...
It was the best of
takes.
It was the blurst of
takes.
You stupid monkey!
Yeah, we've got... this is the first part of our Red Hot Chili medley of the fire stories. So the rest of the show is basically a series of different issues about the fires, because that's really what's been happening this week. And first up, we've got some flaming hot blurst takes from everyone's favorite journalist, Barry Cassidy. Well, he's maybe my favorite journalist.
He's Noon's favorite journalist.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, this is a real bad take from Barry Cassidy. So this was about the protests that were held yesterday when we were recording this Friday, about basically to try and get the government to do some fucking shit about the fires. And a lot of them were framed about Scott Morrison resigning, and there was also asked about like ending coal-fired power and a whole lot of other stuff. But the police and the federal Liberal government, and indeed the state Victorian government, have all been... basically asking protesters not to go out to those protests because something, 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 the fires. Like,
you're pulling resources from the fires.
The police will have to come and watch the people marching, and therefore the fires will be worse. It's not really...
It's all very logical. It makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
I love... One of my favorite things about this is how the, like, right can deploy this argument in both directions. Like, when people, like... our prime minister should probably come back from his Hawaiian holiday. And the right was like, what do you think he's going to come and hold a hose himself? Don't be fucking ridiculous.
Yeah.
And like people having a protest. Oh, you can't put cops there at the protest. They should be out in the fires holding a hose, I guess.
Yeah. So
that's my impression of a right-wing person.
It was really good. I liked it. Thanks. Actually. That was good. Okay. So here's a tweet from Barry Cassidy. The protesters' hearts are in the right place, but their heads are not. The timing of this is counterproductive and it plays into the hands of those who criticize them. So why do it now? And then David John Young, replied, "But why, Barry? When is a good time?" And Barry says, "When police resources aren't urgently needed elsewhere. It's a different debate altogether as to whether or not we should be debating climate change while the fires rage."
So, two things I'd just like to add there. One, I think it's important to note that his original tweet was a retweet of a clip from a Daniel Andrews interview.
Totally.
Where Daniel Andrews was basically like, "I think climate change is real, but these protesters are fucking stupid and putting a whole bunch of people who do believe in climate change offside by choosing to protest while bushfires are happening." Which is a stupid take, and also talking about diverting police resources.
Which is also stupid.
The other thing I wanted to note was that VicPol has publicly said... They've admitted that they're not diverting any police resources that would otherwise be used in like bushfire response the protests.
Because completely obvious to everyone who had thought about this, not trying to be like a big brain centrist.
But like, so why is someone like Barry Cassidy swallowing this line, hook, line, and sinker?
I really have no idea. He should know better.
I mean, to be fair, the police did make a social media post basically telling people to stay home instead of coming to the protest. But obviously that was disingenuous, and then they later retracted it.
Yeah.
Very silly. Anyway, that was the blurst take.
Now here we've got...
It was the best of
takes.
It was the blurst of
takes.
You stupid monkey!
Yeah, so this is a blessed take. So this is from Sam Mills at The Real Mills on Twitter, and he's replying to Barry Cassidy. They're replying to Barry Cassidy, and they say, "You can't have democracy just when you feel like it, Barry. Now is the time when we should be agitating the most, because once it's over, everyone will forget about it." I really liked that, especially the first line, "You can't have democracy just when you feel like it, Barry." Zach and I have been skeptical about the merits of representational democracy here before, and like, I think that that's true, but also Barry and Daniel and everyone else who's been having these like big brain centrist don't protest takes are like deeply invested in liberal democracy being like
the only way to do this.
Exactly. And so they should be strongly supportive of people being able to protest whenever the fuck they want.
No, you don't understand. You can't talk about something while it's happening.
And also not after it's happened or before it's happened.
Well,
before it's happened, it's nonsense. You can't,
yeah. Well, exactly. That's just conjecture. And then later it's too late to have done anything. And why are you dredging up the past? And also it was the Greens' fault. The one thing that, and we've talked about this before, and you've made the joke that like eventually there'll be like only a single week in the year in which we're allowed to discuss climate change. It's not a joke because the bushfire season is starting earlier and ending later. And being worse in the meantime. And the other thing that I find completely disingenuous about this is that the whole protest is about the government's response to the crisis. Mm. It's not some kind of abstract idea that the protesters were asking. Well, look, we can talk about the Sachs-Gomo thing, and I do want to talk about that.
Yeah.
But they're literally trying to pressure the government to do something about the crisis.
It's not a generic climate protest.
This is supposed to be how the system works.
The
people pressure the government to take action on something that they care about and think is important, and then shit gets done and people are happy. That's the theoretical way that it works. Obviously, it doesn't actually function like that. But
so you're saying you hate Australia and freedom and that you love the bushfires?
Australia doesn't exist.
Yeah, we can agree on
secondly,
that.
I'll get your freedom right here, mate. on that point, on the Sachs-Gomo thing.
Yeah.
So there were protests kind of all around the country. Thousands of people turned out. It was really good. And the sacking ScoMo was not the only demand that they had. You know, it was basically the other two big ones were more funding for firefighters, and the other was...
And coal mining.
Moving away from
fossil fuels.
And
also to center First Nations land practices. Was that...
I'm only familiar with the Victorian protest, and disappointingly, I didn't see much of that going on. And look, I wasn't at the entire protest. Mm-hmm. I was only there for the first, third of it, I guess.
Just while it was raining real hard.
Yeah, I got there, got really wet, and then was like, cool, I'm done. So I'm kind of speaking mostly about the Victorian protest here. Sorry to be so Melbourne-centric again, but if you look at the poster for the protest, the two biggest words on it are Sachs-Gomo, and then down it's got also fun firefighters.
Yeah.
And this is something that has kind of been trending on Twitter as well with the hashtag Please Your Majesty, I'm pretty sure it is, which is started by Friendly Geordies.
Great.
Who is apparently the only YouTuber in Australia.
Yep.
Sorry, Harrison. We'll chat about later in the podcast.
That's true. Yeah.
Look, we don't need to spend a whole bunch of time on this. I just think that it's a really counterproductive thing to be asking for a number of reasons. One, there's no good mechanism for doing that. It's something that the Australian government can't actually do.
Only the Liberal Party could do it, and either they won't do it, or they will pick someone worse than ScoMo.
Well, that's it. I mean, so if let's say that it does happen, do you want Dutton? Because that's what you'll get.
Yeah.
And also, it's this sort of strange idea of, I don't know, placing so much blame on an individual.
Right.
When, like,
ScoMo is symptomatic.
Exactly. Getting rid of him is not, like, he is definitely at fault and his response has been horrible.
Yeah.
But the rest of his party is absolutely complicit. The Labour Party is totally complicit. Our entire political system has failed us. And this is the end result of over 250 years of, like, colonial practices that have been destroying this country. And globally speaking as well. It, you know, feels kind of like a weird act of petty revenge.
There's been a lot of hashtag discourse about the monarchy and the Governor General and, like, whether or not we should be turning to the monarch to deal with our domestic political situation. And it's been really funny watching people be like, hey, friendly Geordies, isn't the Queen bad? And he's like, oh, do you fucking love bushfires in the Liberal Party? Because he's a real sophisticated thinker. That's my analysis of why he's acting like that. Anyway,
fucking friendly Geordies.
I would love to go on a long rant about the veiled scepter and the reserve powers of the head of state of Commonwealth countries, but I think everyone will fall asleep before I get more than 10 seconds in. So let me just say, fuck the Queen. Yep.
Thank you for that nuanced take, Noon.
You're welcome. Yep.
So, you know, we're already sort of deep into bushfire talk, but technically we're going to chow down on our mains now. And oh, ow.
Ah, it's real hot. Ooh. Mm. Wait, let me try a different. Oh,
that's
also
yellow,
hot.
The yellow one's also hot.
We're having a red hot chili medley, which just means we've got like a bunch of different little bits of bushfire issues to touch on.
There's kind of a lot going on. I guess we're going to focus mostly on the political and media responses as opposed to talking about what the actual situation is on the ground, because there's much better places where you can get that information. You know, I love to shit on the ABC, and I will continue to shit on the ABC, especially the sort of opinion-y people at the ABC. But the work that they've been doing bringing bushfire news and updates like to the nation has been really impressive, and like one of the positive things about this is seeing that machinery come into action and working really effectively and actually helping people stay safe and informed.
As probably most people who are in bushfire-affected areas know already, the local ABC radio station is the emergency broadcaster. So if you have, if you think that you might be near a bushfire, you can turn on your local ABC radio channel and they will let you know where they are and what you need to do about it.
Mm. But a bunch of the rest of the media in this stupid, non-existent country has been doing a really bad job of talking about the bushfires. So the first thing we wanted to kind of talk about was all of the misinformation and conspiracy theories that are getting peddled around the place at the moment. So the two big ones are that, which is kind of, the first one sort of faded, and we've talked about it a little bit, that basically the bushfires are really bad because there hasn't been enough hazard reduction burning, and that's the Greens' fault because the Greens are sad when you burn a tree, I guess is the logic. But that's sort of been supplanted by this new conspiracy theory that the bushfires are so bad, unusually bad this year because of an epidemic of arson, that these are all deliberately lit fires, and that's why this is happening. And if you want to take it a step further,
there's a nice like synthesis of those two conspiracy theories that the Greens are lighting all of the bushfires so that it looks like climate change is real, which is just really incredible.
The other one that's going around is that the government has purposely lit the bushfires because they want to clear land for high-speed rail between Melbourne and Sydney.
Yeah.
Which, like, in what fucking world would the government ever take action in order to build high-speed rail?
Totally. Yeah, yeah. It's also, like, extraordinarily popular throughout the population, and, like, if they were like, we're going to build high-speed rail. They would just get the votes, and they could just do it. Like,
what makes you think that they would need to start a bushfire in order to clear that land?
Like, right. I mean, surely they would prefer the like job statistics that would come along with them hiring thousands of people to clear that land.
Someone we've hired 15 arsonists. 15
that's right.
Extremely prolific. 183 arsonists.
Well, you know, they needed to make the budget surplus, so they couldn't hire the full works crews. I can't confirm this personally, but someone in Ozpol shitposting said that the reason for these like overlay maps that show all of the fires that are along the same route is that like the way the geography of Australia works is that the only feasible route for a high-speed rail would be through like heavily wooded forests, and that like the way that the fires have been burning is just like in the same place that we would need to build that. So anyway,
smart.
Yeah,
burning it is
correlation does not imply causation.
So yeah, a lot of this conspiracy stuff is garbage, and most of it is being spread presumably by a combination of boomer posters who just don't understand what they're talking about,
yeah,
and trolls. And in fact, there was research that was talked about in The Guardian, like pointing to basically an epidemic of trolls and bots spreading misinformation specifically about these arson claims. So there's all sorts of garbage out there on social media about it, coming from bad faith actors. But I think it's important to acknowledge the role that our like mainstream media publications have been playing in this, specifically The Australian. And this one article that The Australian published, which quickly became the most popular article on the website when it was published. You know, at the time, it was best ranking article. And it's an article with the headline, Arson Arrest Toll Hits 183. Worth pointing out, also, this was behind a paywall, so you couldn't actually click through and see.
Right, for the details, which basically the details explained that the headline was a lie.
Yeah, essentially, 183 people have not been arrested for arson. The figure is
under 30.
Under 30, yeah, somewhere between 20 and 30. And the rest are sort of peripheral, like, fire-related offenses.
People who threw cigarette butts out of their window and that sort of thing, which exactly. May well have started fires. I don't think we're disputing that those people were irresponsible and that they probably committed a crime, but weren't arsonists.
That's not deliberate arson. And, of yeah. course, like, the Oz is pushing the narrative that these bushfires aren't so bad because of climate change,
right,
is bad. They're because bad because arsonists. People. Yeah, yeah. So it's you know, it's a neat kind of climate denialist little conspiracy that they've got going. And this particular line has filtered all the way up to the absolute like in down to like the center of the conspiracy internet. So you have Alex Jones in the States talking about this, and you also have Donald Trump Jr.
Yeah.
Who tweeted, "Truly disgusting that people would do this. God bless Australia. More than 180 alleged arsonists have been arrested since the start of the bushfire season." So that's, you know, the Australia might be able to claim like plausible deniability and say that someone like Donald Trump Jr. has twisted their words, or, you know, maybe he hasn't read the article.
Right.
Because he was behind a paywall. He doesn't have a fucking subscription to The Australian. but this is what they're doing. And like, you know, they are absolutely culpable for the misinformation about this. And like, I think that this is indicative of exactly the kind of straw clutching that the right is going to have to do in order to try and preserve the fossil fuel industry in this country.
100%.
Because like they can feel the
like public
national
sentiment.
Attitude yeah. shifting in the wake of this stuff. So fuck The Australian, bad job. On a kind of related note,
speaking of fuck The Australian, yeah. So one of the big stories that's been out in the last couple of days is that a News Corp employee resigned and wrote a like resignation letter.
Sorry, your soft pay on News Corp just gets me every time. The News Corp, it makes them sound more official.
It does. Is it News Corp? Should I be saying News Corp?
What's like a corporation?
Yeah, I guess.
Is that what Corps is short for? No, as in like in a military context.
I don't think so. I think it's a French word in the military context.
I think
and
you
this
should
corp.
Continue to say News Corps
just
because
for fun.
Because it'll let me keep making fun of you for it.
Great. There's a bumper sticker I saw ages ago that I think about all the time, which is some serious boomer posting content, as all bumper stickers are. Is that the truth, or is your news limited?
Oh!
Burn.
Booyah! I've seen that one around since like the fucking late 90s.
Yeah, yeah. Well, they've been shit for a lot longer than that. This fucking News Corp employee, her name's Emily Townsend, who is a commercial finance manager. She sent an email to, like, everyone, all of the staff, resigning and saying that basically they have been responsible for making the situation worse, irresponsible reporting, and complicity in climate change. Here's a quote from her letter. I've been severely impacted by the coverage of News Corp publications in relation to the fires, in particular the misinformation campaign that has tried to divert attention away from the real issue, which is climate change, to rather focusing on arson, including misrepresenting facts. I find it unconscionable to continue working for this company, knowing I'm contributing to the spread of climate change denial and lies. Which, you know, 100%, that is definitely true. But there's been a lot of debate, both in Ozpol shitposting and elsewhere, about how good this is, basically. There was a hot take from Ruby Hamad, which I shared into the group, that spawned some negative responses, where Ruby was basically saying, well, this person was working for News Corp for ages, and she's complicit in what they've been doing. And should we really be that, like, proud and celebratory of her doing this public resignation?
She was pretty harsh in her language. She talked about her protecting her News Corp employees, and also that she was now going to jump ship to, like, a cushy job at some other liberal employer. So it was, like, pretty strong.
Yeah, it was harsh.
I do, reading it, it kind of felt predicated on the assumption that this person was a journalist. And
yes, which I also did think until this morning. So yeah.
How did you find out that she wasn't a journalist?
I got it from this real cool podcast called Ozpol Snack Pod. No, yeah, Zach was like, she's not a journalist. Yeah.
It's just rare that I get to correct you on a fact. Yeah. So I'm going to use it. She was a New Corp financial person.
Yes. This article from The Guardian describes her as a senior News Corp employee, which I think, yeah, is probably true.
Yeah, and it's part of why the story, she wasn't somebody who...
In the mailroom or whatever, yeah.
Shout out, mailroom comrades.
Yeah, that's right.
I don't hold you accountable for the actions of News Corp.
I also don't. So I've been having a discussion with Lisbeth Latham, amongst others, friend of the show Lisbeth, who was on our IPA episode, and who is an extremely thoughtful and insightful person who knows a lot about shit.
So, love her when she joins the conversation.
Yeah, so I do, like, the fact that she's disagreeing with me does make me reconsider my position significantly, so shout out to Lisbeth.
I'll just point out that Noon didn't reconsider his position when I disagreed with him using almost exactly the same points, but we'll move on.
Yeah, it's because I trust Lisbeth's analysis a lot more than you.
That is very fair.
Yeah, but I still disagree with Lisbeth to some extent, and I think that Ruby's point is completely legit. This person's been working for News Corp. Apparently it was fine when they lied about African gangs roaming the street of Melbourne. Apparently it was fine when Andrew Bolt was a convicted racist and advocated violence against women. Apparently it was fine when they lied about the Greens and climate change for the last 50 years. But, like, now this is unacceptable. And, like... Yeah, I think this was the best thing that she could have done. I support people resigning from shitty jobs with a public...
The higher up they are and the more publicly they do it, the better.
That's right.
And it's important that when they do that, that we say, hey, fuck you, we hate you, we never liked you, we're not going to like you now, we don't support you at all. And everybody else who's thinking about publicly quitting News Corp and saying that they denounce what they've been doing is going to be like, oh, cool, maybe I'll just, like, keep my head down.
Yeah, look, I don't think we need to be that harsh about it. I just think that it's... fine to still be critical of this person despite them doing something good. I don't think...
I agree, but that's a very, like, milquetoast position.
It is. Yeah. I'm not saying she shouldn't have done this or that...
No, you just think that she was getting, like, praise was getting heaped on her and maybe there needed to be a little bit more of a critical assessment of, like, her position, that she isn't a hero, that it's complicated.
That's right. And that... Yeah, I think the issue about all of the things that she hasn't resigned over, like, that's important and relevant to consider.
Look, I want to push back on that a little bit. And her email doesn't mention any other issues.
Yeah.
It's short and to the point, and clearly this was the thing that pushed her over the line. But, like, I've worked at jobs for 8 years where I strongly disagreed with things that were being done. Decisions that were being made by management, things that the, like, that people I was working for, positions that they were taking publicly. But I, like, I needed to eat. I needed a job. Obviously, you know, I was not a senior financial advisor for one of the largest media organizations in the country. So we're talking about different levels of accountability here. But I just want to make the point that I don't, you know, you can't assume that all of that stuff didn't also bother her. I mean, I don't think you quit at the drop of a hat of like, because of the way that your newspaper has treated a single issue. It's a build up over time. There's things get to you and you think, okay, I just won't deal with it. All I'm saying is that I can relate to the experience of coming into work and hating every second of it because you feel like you're having to betray your own values in order to survive.
Totally.
And
Lisbeth made a similar point about coal miners saying, like, if a coal miner was to say, we need to stop mining coal because it's destroying the earth, should we just be like, you're complicit and we shouldn't listen to you or something like that? I think obviously the answer is no, that would be a bad way to respond to that. And so really this question is, at what point does someone become personally culpable for the actions of an organization that they're employed by? And
which is a very simple conversation with a simple answer.
That's right. I mean, we had real quick trials about that in the late 40s, and I think that answers no.
Wow.
Yeah. That's two Holocaust references in this last half hour. Yeah. And, like, this lady is clearly not a Nuremberg-esque person. Like, I don't think that is a super relevant equivalency, but I think that this issue about the degree to which people are culpable for the actions of the people who employ them is difficult. It's not simple. And I think that this woman, previously employed by News Corp, is not obviously on one side of that or the other. I think that there's a complicated issue here and that we should have critical support for her resignation, basically.
Sure, I tend to agree with that. I guess I think that Ruby's take was pretty harsh.
Yeah.
I'm not super familiar with her as a commentator, and I haven't read her book either, even though one of my best work friends has been trying to get me to read it for months. And I plan to. So I'm not going to, I don't want to, you know, make any kind of assumptions about what she's like, but I think that that take was, it seemed pretty rash. It seemed pretty off the cuff, a little bit maybe underinformed and also a bit harsh. And I understand the anger at, like, this person can resign in protest and still feel safe.
Yeah.
You know, in the example that I was giving before when I was like, I know what the experience is of coming in and working at a place that you hate because you need to kind of eat. Seems like she probably has a bit more of a financial safety net than most people would do.
Yeah.
You'd hope so. Managing News Corp's finances, that you would have picked up a trick or two for her own personal budgeting. But my point is that these things, they are messy and complicated, and like those very stark, unnuanced takes like Ruby's one probably kind of missed the point a little bit.
I think it was in response to unnuanced takes on the other side.
I think and that's how you get high quality discourse that we're so familiar with in this country. The one other thing I wanted to mention, which it's basically on topic, was that I saw a tweet from Rick Morton, who is one of the senior reporters at the Saturday paper, and he's on the 7 a.m. podcast often, and I've gotten to kind of quite know and like him through listening to that show pretty regularly. And I saw him retweeting this email from the News Corp person quitting, saying that this something on the lines of, oh, this brings up like traumatic memories for me. And I was like, wait, what the fuck? I didn't realize that he had used to be a News Corp journalist. He's one of the reporters who I think is doing some of the best work in Australian journalism at the moment. Had I known that he was a News Corp reporter, I'm not sure that I would have even given him the chance to like...
And we were talking off mic before about Philip Adams, who also had a column in the Oz, and about why I don't necessarily, why I don't hold him culpable for the actions of the Australians in the same way. So yeah, I think it's a difficult question with nuance on both sides of it.
For sure. I think we can basically agree that it's a good thing that
that she did this.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, this yeah, regardless of whether what you think it says about her as a person or whether or not she should be lauded or celebrated or rewarded for this, I think that we need as many senior News Corp people as possible resigning in disgust. And I do also think that it's kind of, I don't know what the word I'm looking for is. I'm going to say harbinger, but I think I said that last week.
You did.
But I think it's kind of, it points to a backlash in the public discourse against the Murdoch press for not only their specific misinformation in the case of the bushfires, but their continued refusal to, or their continued opposition of climate action.
Yeah.
I think that we are actually seeing a little bit of a paradigm shift in the way that we relate to this stuff. And I think that they're on the back foot and they're scared. And this action by this employee quitting in such a public way and over this specific issue has put it on the front page, basically made it news for other outlets to talk about that, hey, people are fucking fed up with the Murdoch papers at the moment. And I think that's we need to make that news as much as we possibly can. So... You know, and also I don't think it would be an easy thing to do. Obviously easier for her than some others, but, you know, I've got to respect it.
And now it's time for
Shitpost of the Week.
So this week we've got some cromulent original content from Leah Rapato.
On the FB.
You want to lead us through this?
Friend of the show, you know, confidant of the show. Member of our inner sanctum.
Yeah, what honorary mod? Not an actual mod, but an honorary mod advisor.
Yeah, we owe a lot to Leah, who's been one of the absolute biggest supporters of this show, and honored to finally be able to award her shitpost of the week for this amazing little piece that she's done. So it's Scott Morrison on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire. And you ever seen that video what Thomas the Tank Engine actually looks like?
Yeah, it totally is like a weird, like that monster from Monsters, Inc., except he's got the face.
Yeah, so it's this video of like Thomas's fleshy face being attached to like a huge tubular fleshy body with thousands of little legs on it, like crawling out of his like tank engine shell. Deeply disturbing stuff. That's kind of what is happening with Scott Morrison's face here.
It's been like extended forwards in the third dimension of this image.
Yeah, and he's also like got snaking glowing eyes.
Sort of like laser eyes, but yeah.
It's truly horrifying. Excellent stuff. The question really that he's funny. In the hot seat, and the question is he's being asked is, the country you lead is literally burning, bro. What do? A. Fund the RFS. B. Address climate change. C. Postpone Hawaii. D.
Handshakes. Which is, it's written exactly the way that we just said it.
Yeah,
there, so.
That was an extremely accurate audio interpretation of
this
name.
Visual. Yeah. and of course, handshakes is like, he's chosen that as the answer. Yeah.
Yes, that's the one he selected. He's done a bad job.
It's been really incredible. The variety of handshakes that he's fucked up.
And like really, really bad stuff as well, like visiting Kangaroo Island and basically being lucky no one died. And then them being local residents being like, oh yeah, no, two people have died.
And he's like, oh well, I guess I'll just go talk to some other people now. And the lady's like, yeah, that's a good idea.
Yeah, his line was, oh no, I was talking about firefighters.
I was thinking about firefighters firstly. Yeah.
Man, shut the fuck up.
Yeah. Like some of these handshakes have been what I would describe as borderline assault, like the pregnant lady who was like, I don't want to shake your hand, while he grabbed the hand and then gave her a hug, and like, yeah, super fuck, dude, don't touch people without the consent.
It's not good. And I think that this like insistence of going out and getting on the ground is like such a, it really betrays exactly what he thinks like his job is.
Totally.
And when people were talking it was news about him continuing his Hawaii holiday instead of coming back to the country. His response was basically like, well, people know that I can't actually do anything. People know that I can't hold a hose or sit in a control room. People know that I can't actually make a difference, but they want me there to comfort them. And like, I'm touched by that. I'm moved by that. So he literally sees his role as like this, like he just shows up and pats people on the back. Like, that's what he thinks people wanted him to return from his holiday to do.
And like the giving the Woolies bag full of biscuits as like a performance of caring, but just like one that's really transparently not helpful at all. And like, there's been reports that after he got yelled at in Cobargo, he left without leaving any of the supplies that were in his like convoy truck and then sent cops in afterwards to hassle the people who had yelled at him. And like,
which, I mean, this is, that's social media chatter.
Totally. It's, and- not, it's unconfirmed, but I think there were enough of those reports that I personally believe them, whether or not that's it actually happened, unclear. Yeah.
Fair enough. And, but I mean, obviously people are, that's not what people are asking for. They don't want a bag of Woolies biscuits from their fucking prime minister. There's lots of people in these communities who are doing amazing work, and communities have really banded together and like, are helping each other. They didn't need Scott Morrison to do that for them.
And there are organizations and people and charities and businesses who know how to move bags of biscuits from parts of town to other parts of town. They don't need the fucking prime minister to like hand deliver them.
Yeah, literally do it once for a photo op.
Right. Well, like I think what you said is right, that it's clear what he thinks his job is here, which is to trick the Australian public into voting for him again. Like, that's literally his goal right now, is to look like he's doing enough. That's it.
Yeah, it's all about, I mean, that's what he thinks, he seems to think people want as well, aside from the pure political cynicism.
Sure, yeah,
it.
Yeah.
But he's completely refused to, like, take any responsibility for his, like, his failure of a response to like to the bushfires, basically refusing to like acknowledge that it was an emergency or that it was unprecedented early on, and refusal for so long to offer any more
funding
for firefighters. Like, these are the, like, that's the kind of shit you should be doing, bro. Like, it's honestly not that hard. Look, that's probably enough about this dude. He's useless.
Yep.
I don't think sacking him is the answer to our problems.
No.
But I do enjoy laughing at memes of him being useless. So just to wrap up, we wanted to talk a little bit about ways that people could can reach out and help financially for people being affected by the bushfires. This is normally the part where we'd ask you to give us money, but we're not going to do that this week because it seems a bit crass. One thing we wanted to...
I inappropriately shilled for our Patreon enough last week, so yeah.
Yeah, that was...
We can...
Wowee. one thing we just wanted to talk about was money that people are donating to wildlife rescue organizations. So obviously the two sort of main places where the fires are happening at the moment is New South Wales and Victoria. And a lot of people are donating to WIRES, which...
is the New South Wales Wildlife Rescue Service.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember what the
exact acronym
is, but I can't. They do amazing work.
They do.
It's great that people are sending money to them, but it seems to be that a lot of people in Victoria are donating to WIRES.
Not knowing that they're a state-based New South Wales organization.
Exactly. Yeah. So, and Wildlife Victoria has received about 10% of the funding that has gone to WIRES, so that if you are donating to a wildlife fund and you want it to go to Victoria, which currently needs the money, you should donate to Wildlife Victoria. And there are lots of other great organizations that that are doing really good work, but they're a good place to send that money. One of the other fundraisers that we wanted to point people in the direction of is the Fire Relief Fund for First Nations Communities, which is being organized by Neil Morris on GoFundMe. Neil Morris, aka Dreaming Now, who's a Yorta Yorta rapper. You should go and listen to the song Australia Does Not Exist.
Because it's a real
jam. Fucking banger.
Yeah.
And I was going to make that Spotify playlist. I'm going to do it. I'm going to put it out. This fundraiser has been doing really well. They've raised over $1 million. And this is, it's very like on the ground stuff that this funding is going to: temporary relocation costs, basic amenity and emergency relief costs.
Like clothing and toothbrushes and tampons.
Resettling people. And it's really great to see so much support here. And this is obviously money that is being handled and distributed by First Nations people to First Nations people. So that's a really good place to send your money.
And we also wanted to shout out Harrison Engstrom, who's a member of Auspol Shitposting Facebook group, who he's a YouTuber And I think he's going to stream himself playing like some classic games,
which have some kind of relationship to Australia.
Yeah, and I'm pretty sure that's going to happen on the 18th from 10 a.m. So if you want to, check that out. We'll no doubt post about it on the group and maybe the page. And,
There'll be details of it on the group and page.
So. And if you have if you, listener, are doing some kind of fundraising thing that you'd like us to mention on our various social media stuff, feel free to get in touch and we'll share that because all of these efforts, you know, they go together. And anyone who's doing work on this kind of thing, or if you're, I think, a friend of mine, Liam Oakwood, who's also in the group, is doing some like prints and calendars and stuff that the profits going to the fires. So yeah, if you've got stuff that you're doing to help out, feel free to post about it in the group and
get in touch, and we'll signal boost to boost it, you know, our extremely tiny and specific audience.
Exactly. Yeah.
So we'll leave you with that for this week. Thanks very much for tuning in, and I hope you and yours are safe. Keep on snacking in the free world.
Crunch, crunch.